Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We thought we would have three NBA Game 5s in the bubble in Orlando. That is no longer the case. Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and the big story in the national scene. Breaking about an hour and a half ago, the Milwaukee Bucks decided not to take the floor for Game 5 of their first-round playoff series against the Orlando Magic. Now, this protest is in response to the shooting of an unarmed black man named Jacob Bell. This took place about 40 miles north of Milwaukee on Sunday. And shortly after the shooting, the Bucks made a statement by not playing. Now, the Rockets and the Thunder also decided that they would not play today. And then the Lakers and the Blazers followed suit. And so it is not a forfeit on behalf of the Milwaukee Bucks. The NBA has postponed all games. And many players and coaches have spoken out about this shooting of Blake. And earlier today, the Raptors actually discussed the possibility of setting out game one of their second round matchup against Boston. And last night, if you missed it, Doc Rivers gave an emotional statement in response to the shooting. Through the whole deal of the NBA returning to play in the bubble, there has been the talk of social justice and the players making sure that their voices are heard. And in comparison to the NFL and to Major League Baseball, the NBA has taken a very stern stance. And Commissioner Adam Silver has continued to allow his players to voice their stance on these issues. Here on Drive Time Sports, I have stayed completely neutral in it. I'm not going to take a side. Never have, never will. I report to you the facts, and you can decide which side of the fence you want to stand on, and this is absolutely no different. I will tell you this. Players were already worn out because of the bubble environment. Yes, I understand they're living in five-star hotels. I understand that completely. In fact, I have said multiple times on the show, players should not be complaining about their living standards in the bubble at all. It's fantastic. I get this. In the same sense, it would wear on you. Remember when we were quarantined at home in the comfort of our own home around our family? It wears on you. So the emotions are raw. Players are tired mentally. I think that's a lot of the reason why we see inconsistent play in the bubble. This was all prior to the Jacob Blake shooting. Teams are talking about postponing games tomorrow as well, and I believe that they will postpone the games tomorrow. Because right now, the NBA, it's all about solidarity. That's what they have really preached over the last little while. And if you have six teams not play today and six teams play tomorrow, that goes completely against what the NBA is talking about. I believe that the season is actually in jeopardy. Really. Now, with that being said, I could see us returning to NBA playoff action on Friday. But we're not going to have any games tomorrow. The Utah Jazz were scheduled to play the Denver Nuggets at 2 p.m. tomorrow. It would have been game 6. That game's not going to happen, I can tell you right now. That's not official. That has not been reported. But I can tell you it's highly unlikely. NBA players, led by Kyrie Irving, have been extremely vocal in making sure their voices are heard. And today, it's another step in that direction. There are no games. The NBA players feel that it is a distraction from the ongoing issues in the country at the moment. Therefore, no NBA playoff basketball. And like I said, you take the stance that you want to take. I'm simply reporting the facts. I've had several emails and several comments, people asking me questions as to why I haven't said yay or nay as far as the players kneeling for the national anthem. And that's just not what this show is about. Again, I report the facts. You take your stance. That's what's happening right now. No NBA basketball tonight. Three games. have been postponed. And that's the key word, postponed. It's not a forfeit for the Bucks. It's not a forfeit for any other team that was scheduled to play today. It's simply postponed, and the NBA will look at rescheduling these games at a later date. So, with that being said, let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball because, well, there's a lot of day games going on, and right now, the Atlanta Braves are on the verge of giving Gerrit Cole his first loss in pinstripes. This one in the bottom of the sixth inning. The Braves at home taking it to the Yankees 4-1. New York right now is behind Tampa Bay in the standings of the AL East, and we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. We have one game final already. The White Sox, a night after pitching a no-hitter against the Pittsburgh Pirates, they clean up once again 10-3. Jose Abreu homered again. And Dallas Keuchel was outstanding as the White Sox moved to 19-12. This team is for real. Getting ready to start right now, we have the Phillies and the Nationals. Patrick Corbin against Aaron Nola. Definitely a fun pitching matchup in the National League. 4:37 tonight, we have the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. At 4:40, it's the Orioles and the Rays. 5 o'clock, game 2 between the Yankees and the Braves. Tanaka will go up against Max Fried. That game, again, is scheduled for a 5 p.m. start. 5:10 tonight, Twins, Indians, Cubs, Tigers, Marlins, Mets. 6 o'clock hour, the red-hot Oakland A's will take on the Texas Rangers. We get the Reds and the Brewers, the Royals and the Cardinals as well. And then some games in the 7 o'clock hour, Mariners at Padres in San Diego. Now, they, too, are playing lights-out baseball at the moment. 7:40 tonight, we get the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, and then the Dodgers and the Giants. Clayton Kershaw will return to the mound for the Dodgers. The only team that has had success against the stellar Dodger squad, it's the San Francisco Giants, who have won 7 straight. And if you do the math on that, that's a 19-game winning streak if we're playing a 162-game season. 7 wins in a row in a shortened season, it's a big deal. That's a quick look at what is happening in the national sports front. Again, the big story, no NBA games today. They have been postponed. We're going to talk a lot of local sports on the show today. In fact, next segment, we're going to be joined by Emory High School football coach John Famalo. We got to get set for Friday's game. Emory finally at home. Seems like forever since we've had a game at Emory High School, a football game, that is. Coach Famalo will join us next segment. We'll talk about last week's loss to North St. Pete, and we'll talk about the upcoming game Friday against American Leadership Academy. Also on the show today, we're going to catch up with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher. We'll talk all things Major League Baseball. That's straight ahead right here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. We're live from the Auto Farm Studios.
For every passing play, every running play, every win, and every loss, there is one man making all the calls. Get ready to dig deep into this week's game and relive all of last week's plays. It's Real Talk About Your Team.
Middle of the week already, 2 days away from week 3 of the high school football season, and finally, Emory is going to get a home game. Now, the Spartans are still in search of their first win of the season. 2 losses to start the year, 1 to Millard, most recently a 38-6 setback on the road to a very talented North St. Pete team. We're going to talk about that outing and also what lies ahead for this squad right now. Joining us over the phone, we have head coach John Famalo. And, Coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you again.
I appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Definitely, Coach. We're preparing for week 3 of the football season. Didn't know that we would if we would get to this point, but here we are now preparing for American Leadership Academy, and we'll talk about them in just a moment. But, Coach, we'll go back this past Friday and talk about the North St. Pete contest. We knew going in this was going to be a real tough contest. It's a solid team. Coach Bird's done a terrific job. Well-prepared squad on both sides of the field. And they came out and delivered a punch early on and really took control from the second play forward.
Yeah, I mean, they honestly established what they wanted to do, and, you know, we had a hard time answering. We knew we had a work cut out for us going in because they are a really good team. Coach Bird does a good job, and we've had a whole lot of success in the past, and so, you know, we just had a hard time matching physicality, and I say giving up the big kick play right from the get-go on play number 2, you know, that doesn't help your cause, but, you know, we made a lot of mistakes, and good teams, they take advantage of your mistakes.
Yeah, Coach, you mentioned physicality, and I guess we can start by talking about the secondary, because I really like this secondary. I think there's a lot of athleticism, and I think that this is a group that can cause some havoc for teams that want to throw the ball all over the field. However, when you mention physicality, I mean, it stands out. They were a tad bit more physical around the outside, especially outside the numbers. I mean, I thought that was fairly noticeable in this game.
Yeah, I mean, anytime they wanted to get that edge, again, I don't remember 15's number, but he, I mean, he was a man child. And he, when they needed a big play, threw the ball to him. When they needed to run, they ran to his side. And so, you know, somehow you got to figure out how to match that physicality. And again, if you can't set an edge and get things turned back to a lot of your help, you know, it's going to make for a long night. And, you know, what they did. When they needed something, they went to the outside. And again, when they needed a little bit more, they threw to the big guy, and he only had a really good game, and so did Bowles. So.
You did force Bowles into one interception, and going back to our conversation last week, you said we got to make him throw on the run. He doesn't necessarily want to throw on the run. And if I'm not mistaken, Coach, that interception came when he was outside of the pocket, if memory serves me right. So when you guys were able to get a pressure on him, defensively, there were bright spots at times in this game when you were able to establish that pressure.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think any quarterback, it's tough, especially high school quarterbacks, once they get on the run, is to throw the ball, and that's kind of how we felt. If we can get him moving a little bit, and that's what he did. He was moving out of the pocket, and Q made a great read and came off and got an interception. And so, you know, just wish we had a few more of those to help us out. But, you know, there's some positives in the game as you look throughout.
And as far as those positives that you can kind of build off of, Coach, now that we're two games into the season, what are some of the things that you are happy with this team? You look at and you say, okay, you know, we're where we should be, or maybe even a little bit ahead in this aspect of the game.
You know, I think we're a little ahead where we, you know, where we were last year, even though we've got two losses. You know, I look at the two games, Millard versus North San Pete. You know, I think Millard, we struggled a little bit up front trying to find and identify pressures and things like that. And I thought this week we did a really good job finding pressures. And you know, we struggled at the, you know, at the skill positions. And so, I mean, if we get both sides, both, you know, our front and our quarterbacks and skill guys playing on the same page, well, honestly, you know, playing good at the same time, we'll be a pretty good team. But it just seems like we have a hard time getting one thing going versus, you know, having something fall through the cracks. And so, you know, a lot of it comes back on us coaches and trying to get some of the practice things that we're trying to do to equate to games. And, you know, hopefully the kids are starting to understand that, you know, you got to do a lot of the little things and be disciplined on the things that the coaches ask you to do. And a lot of it, we missed little assignments here and there, and it cost us really big against a good team like that.
Is it fair to say, Coach, that at this stage the defense may be a little bit further ahead than the offense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if one's further ahead. I mean, you give up 38 points, that's tough to say that, you know, you're further ahead. I feel like 21 of the 38, you know, was tough. I felt like we gave away, but, you know, I thought there was a couple drives we made them earn. We got some third downs that we could have got us off the field, but I think defensively we've been, you know, fairly solid for the most part. Offensively, you know, it's not necessarily play calling. It's a lot of execution on our end, so I would say, you know, probably that we just got to execute better on the offensive end and put points on the board. And so whether one's ahead of another, I just feel like defensively they're a pretty good feel of, you know, the kids and what they do. And so that'd be my probably only thing. I don't know if one's ahead of another, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you look at the grand scheme of things, I mean, the defense did spend a lot of time out on the field. And so even if the offense isn't scoring, just putting together a couple of efficient drives that can maybe flip field position or maybe even give the defense a little bit of a break.
Yeah, and that's a lot of it, you know. You know, our special teams weren't great. And I talked to Coach Gary about that. It wasn't necessarily his fault. We didn't spend a lot of time on the punt situation. And so, I mean, we got to figure out some way to flip the field and play on, you know, that side of the field. We played on our side of the field most of that first half. And, you know, if you do that, you're going to, you know, it's tough to defend 4 yards versus, you know, 60, 80 yards. And so, when we're able to get them to drive a little bit, I think you can slow them down. And so, whether it's offensively or special teams, we got to somehow figure out how to get that field flipped.
Again, our guest right now is Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans. Coach, let's jump ahead. We'll talk about Friday's game. ALA comes in 2-0, but this is a very beatable team. I really like this matchup on paper. In fact, you go back to last year, I mean, we had a fantastic, highly entertaining game that went back and forth that really could have ended in our favor. So when you look at it on paper this year, some new faces. I know it's always tough to peg on what the academies are going to have coming back in the, you know, from last year, but nonetheless, this should be a very entertaining game.
Yeah, no, we look forward to this game. Again, ALA, when we played in there last year, felt like, you know, it was a back-and-forth game, a game that we should have won. But at the end of the day, they got it. So, you know, I think our kids are looking forward to this game. And, you know, it's hard to tell talent-wise what they have back. I know they've got some different players. I know they lost some guys up front. But as far as bodies and who you see, it's tough to know who's coming back. With both guys watching a little bit of film, that, you know, they've got some pretty good skill guys. We've seen them in 7-on-7, actually, and they actually have some different players, quarterback and other things that, you know, I was expecting. So, you know, maybe a little bit different animal than we're used to. But at the same time, I think we just prepare the same and try to play assignment football and everybody learn to do their job and see what happens.
They can't effectively run the football. I mean, Manuel Oliveras has over 100 yards over the last couple of games, and so he can't effectively move the football. But, Coach, this is a team that definitely wants to rely on their quarterback, Hiram Morley. I got to see him a little bit in the game against Carbon. This kid's an athlete all the way around. And to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised looking at his athleticism, just how fast he really was on tape in that game against Carbon.
Yeah, no, he's an explosive player. If you watch him again, that's tough to defend. Even when you have a running quarterback, that's just one other option that they have. And so a kid that some pretty good quickness, and when he's in the open field, he can go. And so watching film, you know, it's a little bit scary, but I think our kid's up to the challenge, and you just got to keep him controlled. And like I say, the biggest thing is we got to make sure we play silent football and we make tackles. You know, we missed a lot of tackles last week and last 2 weeks, and so we got to get better at that.
Defensively, they've been very good. I mean, they've given up one touchdown in the game against Carbon. They gave up one touchdown in the game against Ben Lohman. I know that's a really small sample size, but Coach, what have you noticed defensively about ALA that you hope to exploit on Friday night?
They're really good up front. You know, the D line's pretty solid, and then they've got some decent safeties. They got some quickness and some kids that'll come up and hit you, and so. You know, we really have to, you know, get on guys and stay on guys. And like I say, the secondary, they're pretty good. They move well. And so just got to make sure, again, we're efficient with the ball and do the proper reads, and we should just be fine.
It's finally the home opener. Seems like forever since the last time we had a football game at Emory High School, but it's finally here, Coach. And, you know, I guess we can't really say how this team's going to play at home because in 2 weeks they haven't played at home yet, but there's got to be that comfort level. I'm sure the kids are finally excited to play in front of the hometown crowd.
I think it is. They are. Nice to be home and to play in front of your crowd, and so I think kids are looking forward to that. Again, two road games right off the bat, but I think just the comfort of being home, of familiarity with the field and what's going on, and I think that'll help the kids hopefully settle in, and hopefully we can put it all together to Friday and, you know, have a good game.
Yeah, I mean, while the first two games were on the road, if you take a look at the rest of the schedule, the road schedule's not too terrible. I mean, a road trip to JUAP's not an awful drive. Same at Carbon. I mean, that's essentially a home game with the crowd following that we get at that contest, and then Richfield. So from here on out, that road travel is pretty light for this football team.
No, in the favor, you know, I think the schedule's in our favor this year as far as once we get to region. And like you say, we do have to travel to JUAP, but the next 2 weeks we're home with ALA and Union, and then once you get to region, I think we only travel a couple times, so and one being the Carbon. So really favorable for us. We just got to make sure, again, we can take care of business, and starts next week with ALA.
Hey, Coach, a couple of more questions before I let you go, and we can talk briefly about Region 12 and the 3A classification. Four out of the six teams have yet to pick up a victory. Richfield's 2-0, San Juan is 1-1, and the non-region schedule, I know it's so hard to really peg. There's so many variables that go into it. I mean, records can be deceiving, but have you paid attention to this region, and what has stood out to you at this point?
I think Richfield's probably been the surprise of anything. I say I knew they would. They have a few players back with a new coach. I just wondered how they would be. And so, you know, them being 2-0, and then New San Juan would be decent. A new Graham would be down a little bit. South Sevier be about the same. And so, and then Carbon with a new coach, I know that's always tough. And so, you know, I think if you look at it, you know, Richfield's probably the surprise, but at the same time, things are wide open. Again, RPI is what really matters, but I think if we can get some good wins in our region, hopefully, you know, it'll help us when it comes to RPI ranking time.
And we can end with this, Coach. As far as the injury front is concerned, everything good still 2 weeks into the season?
Yeah, we got a few banged up here and there, but for the most part, our kids are pretty healthy. And so, I say week two, we'll keep our fingers crossed and hopefully we can continue to get after it and stay healthy and continue to play a season.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time again, and we'll see you at the contest.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
That's Coach John Fumalo again of the Emory Sport and Football Team. We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move over and talk Major League Baseball right after this.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Reached the midway point of the Major League Baseball season. It's going by in a hurry, but I'll tell you what, it's been awfully fun. In fact, last night, the Dodgers and the Giants actually crossed that 30-game threshold. They're now into the back half of the season. Here we are on August 26th, and things are really starting to get interesting as we near the trade deadline. We're going to talk baseball and more right now with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher who joins us every Wednesday. And Bill, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun out here in San Francisco with a 7-game winning streak. And, of course, the rival Dodgers are in town and playing their last 3 games as they played 7 already down in L.A. And the Dodgers were up 4-3 in that 7-game stint. Now they come here and play the final 3. And sure enough, the Giants are staying hot and they won yesterday in 11 innings in a very good baseball game.
Very good. Very entertaining contest all the way through and through. When you outscore the Dodgers, you're doing something right. I know the Giants got to Julio Urias early. It's 3-0 Dodgers in the first inning of this game, and you think, oh boy, they're going to blow the doors off the Giants. But Bill, with the 7-game winning streak, you and I were talking off the cuff, that's equivalent to 19 games in a 162-game season. And when you look at the playoff structure, I mean, 2 teams in the East, 2 in the Central, 2 in the West, then we'll take the next 2 best records. Right now, the Giants would in fact be in the playoffs. That's astonishing, isn't it?
It sure is. As of last week, they were 8-16, and everybody was going to cut off Kapler's head. They wanted Farhan to trade all the old guys, and sure enough, in 1 week's time, all the old guys got hot. Brandon Belt is just on fire. He was on 11 straight times. And 11 straight at bats with a few home runs in there. Longoria is just scalding the ball. And Brandon Crawford, even though he's had a couple defensive woes, he's hitting the ball. So all three of these guys have come to life, and that's what they need, especially with the young guys like Yastrzemski, Solano, and 30 years old, I say, still young. But you still have some good talent on this team. And now the crosstalk is he going to trade? Is Farhan going to trade? Is he going to build a team, or is he going to sell some of these older guys that you could save some salary on, especially a Johnny Cueto?
Yeah, and looking at the way things are starting to shape out, I mean, at the beginning of the year, we thought that the NL West, you had the Dodgers, then you had the Padres, maybe, and then you had the Rockies, Giants, and Diamondbacks. And I guess a few pundits were actually high on Arizona or thought that they could make a run. I wasn't one of those. But, Bill, looking at it, it is the best division in baseball. Definitely the best division in the National League. I mean, I guess you could probably make an argument for the AL Central. Maybe you could make an argument for the East based on the fact that the Blue Jays and Orioles have hung around that 500 barrier. But nonetheless, the NL West has got to be in that conversation for the best baseball in the league right now.
I agree with you, and of course I do the NL West every day and follow them and see what's going on. And it just seems that one team gets hot and the other team struggles. You know, you look at Arizona, their last homestand, they won 5 in a row. They go on a road trip, they lose 2 to Oakland, and then they come into the Giants and they lose 3. Now they've lost another 2 to Colorado, and we talked about the Giants being 8-16 a week ago. Arizona was in third place. So everybody's kind of beating each other up, and the Dodgers right now are beating everybody up except the Giants. And in an 8-game series, they're 4-4 with 2 left. So who knows what's going to happen. But as you said, if we ended up doing the playoffs right now, the Giants would be playing the Dodgers in a 3-game series, and I don't think the Dodgers would really want to do that.
No, I don't either, because the Giants, as you alluded to, that's really the only team that can beat this Dodger squad at the moment. Bill, the World Series champion Washington Nationals right now, we're sitting at 11-16, and it's really, 27 games into the season last year, they were similar. I mean, this was not a good team to start off the first half of the year. Unfortunately, you don't have an additional 65 games once you hit that midway point to kind of pull things together. Is this team dead in the water? And with the trade deadline approaching, would Washington consider moving some of these older pieces that they have?
Interesting point. And, you know, Strasburg out now, you don't have that 1-2 punch, you know, and you got Scherzer there. And there has been talk about moving Scherzer, which kind of I shake my head on. But again, you're talking the same way with guys in their low 30s, mid 30s. Are they going to move them? And are they going to play that game? Because as you and I talked last year, we thought they were firing the manager and they were going to move 100 pieces in that whole organization. And sure enough, they win the World Series. So I don't know what the Nationals' future, you know, if you look in the crystal ball, I don't know what they have. So yeah, is that a team that could trade some parts? I think so. It sure looks like the Yankees are going to make some trades and build up their rotation as well as their bullpen and see what kind of pieces they want to give up. But Toronto, Tampa, you know, Tampa Bay has just been a phenomenal team this year. Their defense is so stellar. It's interesting just to see the newer teams, the new faces, and that's what's fun about this 60-game season.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball. We'll talk more about Bill's other workings here in just a few moments. Bill, now at this stage in the season, is there a team outside of, we'll say, Oakland and Tampa Bay that has caught your eye as maybe a surprise?
You know, there a couple of them, really. You know, when I go back to the NL West, the San Diego Padres, the Slam Padres, the Grand Slams this past week, that is phenomenal when you think about it, four straight days with Grand Slams. Their youth is starting to come around. Tatis Jr. has just been playing so well. Machado's hitting the ball now. I just think that if Padres stay hot, I think they can catch the Dodgers. I really do. That's one team to keep my eyes on. And of course, Yates is out. Now Pomerantz is out. They're going to be looking for some bullpen help, too. So going up to next Monday, I think there will be some moves for pitching more than fielders.
Yeah, I mean, as far as San Diego is concerned, they have position players. I mean, they've had a surplus of position players for a while, right? So, you know, you look at the rotation and maybe some of the younger guys that they're going to have to rely on. Drew Pomeranz going down, that's a big deal for this team because Kirby Yates wasn't great at the beginning of the season, but Drew Pom is a guy that you had an opportunity to take a look at over the last few years. And, Bill, he was filling in nicely. In fact, he had pitched much better than Kirby Yates had at the end of last season going into this year. Drew Pom had been the man in San Diego. I thought they had their closer.
So did I. And when you had them both, when they signed Pomeranz, that big deal, three-year contract. And then you had Yates. I was like, wow, good 1-2 punch, righty-lefty. Now they're both out. So they are band-aiding that bullpen, but their offense has just been, you know, killing people. And, you know, I keep going back to these Grand Slams. You know, it started with a 3-0 Grand Slam, but, boy, it continued right on from there. And this team has offense. That's why I think you can't close your eyes on San Diego possibly winning the NL West if, by chance, the Dodgers go in kind of a spin here in the month of September. But, you know, you start looking at other divisions. I don't think the Astros are done either. I think the Astros have another run with them. They're playing the A's this weekend in Houston if that series does prevail because of the hurricane. And those games are always meaningful. Those games are always head-scratchers. And you remember the last time they played, they brawled. So it's going to be interesting how this goes back at it in Houston this weekend and see what kind of challenges they're going to have, especially if they start throwing at each other.
Yeah, I'll give you my surprise team, Bill. I think it's the Miami Marlins. And every time I think this team's going to kind of flounder off, they rally off two or three consecutive wins. And I was watching the Marlins late last week, and I started paying attention to what they've accomplished statistically. I mean, a couple of offensive players and Jonathan Villar, who's been an all-around guy this year, if he's stealing bases or if he's knocking in runs, I think he's got 10 RBIs to 9 stolen bases or something similar to that. He's batting close to 270. And then you have Jesus Aguilar. These aren't household names. You know, Corey Dickerson, they're not names that jump out at you. You know, Matt Joyce, but you look at what the offense has been able to produce, and it hasn't been bad for Miami. This is a team that has surprised me. And then you start taking a look at what they've done on the pitching end of things, and I mean, some quality starts coming from Pablo Lopez. They have some surprise players that have popped out this year.
You're absolutely right. When you start naming names on that team, a lot of people don't even know who you're talking about. But when you start watching this team, you're going to see some names and players that are starting to come alive. And that's what Derek Jeter was talking about a couple of years ago, about some of the young kids that are on the verge of making it to the big leagues. And they're not a fluke. They're playing good teams, beating the Mets. And the Mets, I just don't know how they're not winning. Of course, a couple injuries there. But still, you know, you're playing some good quality teams and you're winning. And I think that's a big plus for the Marlins. And we'll see if they can prevail. Of course, they got to make up a lot of games, this as well as St. Louis. And those doubleheader seven-inning games, I scratch my head because it reminds me of high school baseball.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. In fact, I can't even call it junior college baseball because when we play JUCO ball, we have nine-inning games and then a seven-inning game. We don't get back-to-back seven-inning games. So it's a little bizarre the way things have gone down, and that will impact the final standings. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, I do. I think that will. And you know, you're playing a doubleheader, then a single game, then a doubleheader. I mean, you're wearing out your staff. It doesn't matter what kind of guys you're bringing up or back. You know, that does wear on your team. You have to play two games and a single game and then a doubleheader. It does tire you out. And managers are tired. Even coaching staffs are tired. And they can't have a regular day like they used to where they could come early in the morning and have those prep meetings. They can't do that anymore. So the coaches' meetings and things like that are jarred by, you know, social distancing and being part of here and there. And they can only be in the clubhouse for so many hours, and they have to get out of the clubhouse as soon as the game's over. So there's some changes going on, but at the same time, I'm right there with you. The Marlins, the Tampa Bay Rays, love to see some new teams in this tournament.
And we can end with this, Bill. Last week we talked about a near no-hitter. Last night we got a no-hitter within the same division, and it happened to come against an NL team as the Chicago White Sox and Lucas Giolito throws the first no-hitter of the season, 101 pitches, shuts out the Pirates 4-0. I didn't know if we'd get a no-no this year with only playing a 60-game season, but boy, within one division, we've had nearly two in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was exciting. I got to watch the last inning. I was flipping, and I saw MLB saying, hey, we're having an update, so I kind of stood there and watched it, but he goes 0-2 on the last hitter and tries to throw a fastball up and gets it about belt high, and a line drive goes to right field. And I love his comments at the end. He goes, I don't know what I was thinking. I just threw the pitch, and he hit a bullet out to right, and sure enough, at the end of the game, and I'm just thinking, throw a slider in the dirt. Don't even throw a strike because he was so aggressive. But he got it. And as a pitcher, I just commend him. That's a tough, tough game. It is so tough on you mentally, and they showed some shots of him in the dugout. Nobody was talking to him. You isolate yourself, and you kind of try to think about what I got to do the next inning and what hitters are coming up. And I never had one in the big leagues. I went 8 2/3, but you have to have some luck. And like he said in the postgame show, he goes, there's always one play in a no-hitter that the defense does, and he goes, I got to tip my hat to my right fielder because that was really a bullet he caught to end the game. And it's true. You know, when you look at some of the no-hitters, there's always a diving catch or a great throw to get an out. But it's cool. I just love seeing no-hitters, especially in a 60-game season when we're not even talking about pitchers going nine innings.
Exactly. Bill, again, I always look forward to the conversations. It's always fun just to chat baseball with you. Thank you again for the time, and hopefully we'll do it again next week.
Jordan, you take care of yourself, and I hope all your listeners be safe. And of course, with COVID-19 out there, just be safe. Everybody wear a mask, wash your hands, all the things that you need to do to protect yourself as well as loved ones around you.
Awesome. Thank you again, Bill.
All right, take care, buddy.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
It's not every day you have an interview fall into your lap, and that's exactly what we have here today on Drive Time Sports. This is going to be very interesting. Russell Larkins, now you may not know the name, but you can look him up on Facebook, Run Russell Run. Russell began his journey running from North Carolina on April 27th. And he's going to end his journey in San Francisco. And it just so happened that Russell was passing by the radio station, and we decided to bring him in for an interview. Russell, thanks for sitting down with us for a minute.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll get you out of the hot weather for a moment and into an air-conditioned radio station.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so again, I have next to no knowledge on what it is you are doing. You and I had a brief conversation, but I seen you running through town earlier today, and then you're passing the radio station, and so we brought you in to talk about something unique, something fun.
Yeah. So I started running from Wilmington, North Carolina on April 27th with the plan to run to San Francisco, California. I just chose that randomly. If you run across America and do it for time, the place you start is San Francisco, and you go all the way to New York. That's like the route. So I just chose San Francisco randomly and decided to start running. Basically to raise money for veterans that were struggling with COVID, whether they were furloughed from work or whether they had lost their jobs, or just to motivate veterans to get outside and work out. Social distancing, you know, it's easy to run and distance from other people, and so isolation and stuff like that can really affect you, you know, mentally. So we just wanted to, my fiance and I just wanted to do something for veterans. And so I started a nonprofit called Veterans for Good. We ended up getting sponsored by Michelob Ultra. They donated $10,000 to our cause. And so I just took off by myself with a stroller. And then she ended up coming out when I was in St. Louis. And so she's in Green River right now. And so I run and camp and go to like the next big city. And then she moves to like the next city. And then we kind of bound and move like that, because she still has to work from home. So, yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, this is, dare I say, spur of the moment type deal? Or did you
your mind? So I left 6 days after I decided to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a book called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. He's a Navy SEAL. Pretty awesome guy. And he pretty much challenges you to get out and do that crazy thing that you've always, you know, thought about doing or wanted to do, and to inspire others, and which is what he one of his main goals is to inspire, you know, young people. And so I just, you know, I decided to do it that day. I was out on a run at 3 a.m. I used to run before work for a couple of hours every morning, and I was listening to a podcast about him. It was talking about his book. So I downloaded his book, started listening to it. And within like four or five hours, I asked my boss if I could take a leave of absence and told my fiance that I was going to run across America. So, and I left 6 days later.
Did your boss and your fiance look at you like you were crazy, or were they very supportive?
Yeah, my boss thought I was crazy, but he was supportive. And like I said, seven people had been furloughed from work because of COVID. And I was like the only one that didn't, me and one other person. And so it wasn't hard to get somebody else to come back, because pretty much everybody that works there was, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. I had some savings saved up, so I was okay. So I just took off. Yeah.
Wow. So you leave from North Carolina. You're here in Price, Utah today. What has that journey been like? I mean, when you're running and you're obviously going down the road, you have cars coming by. What's been the reaction from people?
I just see people's faces most of the time, and mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I get the people that just shoot their hand up as fast as they can because they see the American flag. I run with a full-size American flag the whole time, and then I get people that are just like, they look dumbfounded, you know, they're just like they don't know what to think, you know. I ran through Colorado, went over Independence Pass, and people thought I was absolutely insane because I was running like on the side, like the white line. I was riding the white line, and the white line was the side of the mountain. So, I mean, it was pretty crazy. It was 12,000 feet of elevation. I went over three passes that were about 12,000 feet of elevation. It took me a little while to get over the Rockies, obviously, but I'd honestly take the mountains over the heat out here. But actually, it hasn't been that bad the past couple of days. It was much worse when I was down near Green River. I think it was like 101, 102. As I guess move north, it's gotten a little bit cooler, so that's good. And then I had to run through the smoke in Glenwood Springs, and then even down into Grand Junction, and the smoke was pretty bad. I didn't know. I thought that might affect my lungs, so I was kind of concerned about it. I dropped it down to about 20 miles a day instead of 27 to 30. The most I've done in one day is 71 miles, I ran 71 miles in 24 hours straight, nonstop, for Memorial Day. So that was Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was on every news station in Chattanooga for it. So yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That was going to be my next question. What's the media hype or the media attention been like for you?
Yeah, it was really good until everything started going down with like the social unrest and everything. Essentially, you know, I was on every news station in the towns that I was running through until I got to Nashville, and then there was like a peaceful protest, and I ended up going to it, you know, and it was, you know, it was super great. And then I had my American flag and everything. And then somebody yelled, you know, FTP. And then all of a sudden, you know, they started going toward the police station. And I left. And Nashville was supposed to like have me on every news station there. And then it ended up, you know, they were just too busy. And then pretty much every big city, you know, every once in a while I get on one. I was on CBS4 Denver. They found out about me through some random person once I was actually way past there. I was in Breckenridge, Colorado. When I was supposed to be on Fox Denver, and essentially they were too busy with, you know, they were tearing down the tent city in front of the courthouse there. So it's been pretty crazy.
I definitely I applaud what it is you're doing. And before I let you go, we have to talk about the cause, because of course all this effort, all this work, and all this time away from work, it is to bring awareness to a cause that you are very, very proud of.
Yeah, I was an infantry squad leader in the Marine Corps. I led a squad of Marines in Afghanistan, and 20 veterans commit suicide every day, which is, you know, really upsetting, and obviously 20 too many. And if 20, you know, commit, then how many actually think about it? You know, I was diagnosed with PTSD when I got out of the Marines, and I didn't really do anything about it. The psychiatrist said I needed to be on a bunch of medications, and I decided that wasn't something I wanted to do, and it affected me pretty badly for the first like year or so. And then I found, you know, running, yoga, meditation, stuff like that really helped. So I started practicing that, but a lot of veterans don't want to do that because of just, you know, one, a lot of veterans get lazy when they get out. They're not forced to wake up at 5 a.m. anymore and go for these runs and stuff like that. So a lot of them gain weight and just don't go outside anymore and exercise. And I think that really affects them mentally. So I'm really just trying to motivate veterans to get outside. And then also provide grants to veterans that are struggling financially, because obviously that can induce a lot of stress and anxiety. And so we've raised $35,000 so far. And, 10 of that went to Semper Fi and America's Fund. And then we've raised some money for Dogs for Our Brave, that takes rescues and rehabilitates them into service dogs for veterans. And that's a pretty amazing organization as well. So
yeah. Very, very neat. Very neat deal. Again, Run Russell Run on Facebook, correct?
Yeah. Instagram, Facebook. If you Google it, it'll come up. So
Run Russell Run, you're a real life Forrest Gump. I can call you that, right?
Yeah, sure.
Russell, I appreciate you taking out some time in your run to hop in and just do a spur of the moment type interview. I think it's a great thing that you're doing, and I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, and appreciate the AC for a few minutes. Thanks.
Hey, enjoy the rest of your run.
All right, thank you.
That's a fun, unexpected interview to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Be safe. I am out.